Good morning and welcome to Bank Chat. I'm Hugh Chiverton, your co-host today, Anna Fenton. Anna, good morning to you.
Good morning, everybody.
We're taking a look at the local property market. Chief Executive Carrie Lam has said there won't be any helping hand from the government at the moment, despite the downturn or apparent downturn in the market. And the administration is also proposing to restrict relief on rates to one property per person. Do you think that's the right approach? Why do you think there should be any concession at all? Or why charge rates at all? What do you see as the outlook for the market? How do you think the rise in US, possible rise in the US interest rates will impact it? Or have those rises stopped? Would a drop in the market reduce calls for increasing land supply? Let us know your thoughts. You can leave a message on our Facebook page, Backchat on RTHK Radio 3. Email us, backchat@rthk.hk. Call us on 233 88266. After 9:20, we're talking about Meng Wanzhou and the Huawei case and Trump's involvement in that. Once again, we are looking now for ideas for our Backchat Person of the Year. Put your thinking caps on. We're going to open the voting, we hope, next week. A person you think who deserves the ultimate accolade of Backchat Person of the Year. It's mostly for fun, so it can be kind of you can get creative when you're thinking of an outstanding personality. Whether it's Victor Mallet has been proposed, or the mascot from the fire services, Xi Jinping, whoever you think it should be, drop us a line, bankchat@rthk.hk, and we'll start the poll next week. To today's first issue, the local property market, we're joined in our central studio now by David Faulkner, Executive Director of Valuation and Advisory Services in Asia with Colliers International. David Webb, a shareholder activist and founder of websites.com, and Xi Wing Ching, who's the founder of the Centerline Group. Maybe we'll start with you, Mr. Xi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. How do you see the market at the moment? You know, it seems to be drifting downwards. How do you see the 2019?
I think the market has turned around because the United States has taken a completely different attitude to China. They use be glad to see China's reform because it's moving closer to the Western world, from planned economy to market economy, from not allowing private property to now have private enterprise. But now China have developed too fast. Going to cause a threat to the U.S. security and its leading position in the world. So I'm afraid we are entering a new age of Cold War. United States will urge all its allies to block the development of China. Hong Kong's economy rely on the service industry, and its main client is China. If China is not doing well, it won't be good for Hong Kong's future. So I'm afraid not many people would be so keen in investing in the property market in Hong Kong in the coming years. So the market is going to readjust itself to the new situation.
So, Mr. Xi, are you talking about local investors getting shy in the market, or investment from China and other places?
I think from both sides. I think for the local investor, of course, they will be affected by the new situation. For the Chinese people, if they have a chance to get money out of China, then they are still interested in acquiring property in Hong Kong. But if the economy in China is not doing well, they need money to help their business in China. I'm afraid some of the people who have bought property in Hong Kong, when they are facing their business problem, they will be forced to sell their property in Hong Kong and bring the money back to their business.
So it's not interest rates?
Interest rate is not the main problem. You see, the interest rate has risen for 8 times, but Hong Kong need not to follow for the first 7 times, and only half step for the 8th time. That means Hong Kong still have a lot.
Yeah,
of money.
as soon as it does follow, then the market goes down. Surely it's really just a reflection of the interest rates. It's a question of what you do with your money.
I don't think there's a too much problem in Hong Kong property market because we have no overbuilt problem. We have no over-leverage problem. Our problem is only the price is a little bit too high for the user, but it's still affordable to the investor. We have a lot of money in the bank system, and they find no place to go. So if not the political arena has changed, I think some of the money will still go to the property market.
Okay, and presumably that's quite bad news because that's going to be a long-term trend.
Mm-hmm.
Also that's going to affect the economy generally in Hong Kong if the situation is as you describe it.
Yes, I think the economy will slow down and the property market, the sentiment in the property market will change too. At this moment, not just the secondary market, even in the primary market, the transaction is very thin. That means not many people are willing to make decisions at this moment.
Mm-hmm. Okay. David Faulkner, good morning to you.
Morning.
Thanks for joining us. Do you agree with that assessment?
Yes, I'm probably not quite as negative as Mr. Xi in terms of the long-term impact, but certainly in the short term, the trade war is definitely having an impact on the economy. I think as far as interest rates are concerned, the fact that we did increase local interest rates last time around was a signal to the market that if there are any more interest rate increases in the US, we will probably follow, whereas before, as Mr. Xi says, we hadn't been. So I think that is bringing another level of uncertainty into the market. But money is cheap in Hong Kong, and I think we can put the interest rate up quite a bit from where we are now before it really starts to hurt. But it's introduced another negative element, and if you combine that with the trade war and the possible economic implications of that, that's why we've got a lot of negativity, and that's why prices, particularly in the residential sector, are starting to drop.
Are we seeing this reflected on the commercial side, and is it going to come through in lower rents, which would be surely a stimulus for Hong Kong retail especially?
It will be. At the moment, I think the drop has been more on the capital value side. And clearly investors here are looking for better yields. So to see capital values drop while rents hold is actually sort of rebalancing the investment equation. But clearly if there is a downturn in business, there will be a downturn in demand. But we're not seeing any sign of that at the moment. So the commercial rental market is generally holding up quite well.
And do you agree with that assessment that it's more than just a trade war, effectively? And you know, this is something like Jack Ma and others have been saying. It's not just a question. It's not something that might be settled in a single meeting between Xi and Trump. It's more an ideological thing. It's more a strategic thing. It's more the superpowers in a big fight.
Yeah, I think it goes beyond Trump. I think there's a view that, you know, when Trump goes, this situation will continue. So I think it is a longer-term American policy. But I think, as with everything else, one has to hope that common sense is going to prevail at the end of the day, and we'll seek an accommodation that works for both sides.
We'll just touch on it now, and we'll return to it. But the government has got plenty of tools to stimulate the market, hasn't it? Because it's got all kinds of taxes and measures and things which are cooling measures which it could withdraw if necessary.
No, absolutely. My experience with government is that it tends to be reactive, so it will want to see a pretty pronounced downturn trend before it starts withdrawing some of the cooling measures. The government here is very heavily involved in the property market, as you know. They're the monopoly land supplier. They approve all the developments as well as taxing property, so they have a lot of options to stimulate the market should they want to, but I don't think at the moment they're going to do that until they see a real sort of downturn trend.
But isn't this what they wanted, to cool down the market? Wasn't this the whole point of all these stamp duties and things?
Well, I think the objective of stamp duties was supposed to be to reduce prices. What it actually did was to reduce liquidity. It didn't have a lot of impact on prices. I think the trade war and the interest rates have actually had the impact on the prices. My view is that all these cooling measures, particularly the stamp duties, need to go because they're stopping the property market from functioning properly. Mm. And when you've got very low liquidity, the market then becomes very volatile, and that's really something we don't want. So I'd like to see those measures go as soon as possible, but I think there'll be a time lag before the government does anything.
I mean, in your experience, is there a kind of tipping point where the government will remove them, or do they just play it day by day?
Well, I think what will happen is we'll have to see a sustained downward trend. At the moment, we're saying the drop next year might be 10-15%. For Hong Kong, that's a bump in the road. Nobody gets too upset about it. If we overshoot and we go down by more, then I think people will start getting worried. And the other issue is that the government has been trying to protect the banks by limiting the loan-to-value ratio to 70%, which means you can see a 30% drop in property values before we go into negative equity. So if we start seeing a drop of 20 to 25%, I would expect the government then will have to step in and remove these measures. Otherwise, they will see exposure of risk to the banking system as well, which, of course, nobody wants.
Okay. David Webb, good morning to you.
Morning.
Thanks for joining us once again. Do you agree? What do you make of that assessment?
Well, I certainly agree that we should abolish all forms of stamp duty. And I've been on your show often enough, long enough, to be criticising those measures when they were brought in and warning that they will only slow down the market of turnover. They won't affect valuations, because valuations are the net present value of future rental incomes after tax, discounted for risk, and the transaction costs don't in themselves affect values at all. It also follows, of course, then, that when we remove those measures, they won't affect values at all. It will increase turnover again. It will, reinstate some jobs in the estate agency sector and also in the renovation sector, for example, because people have completely stopped buying apartments, renovating them and selling them 6 months later because they'll be whacked with a massive stamp duty if they do that. And if they're doing it through a company, they'll be whacked in both directions, buying and selling. So that has killed off the renovation market. To Mr. Xi's comments on China, I have a slightly different perspective on that, which is China has stopped reforming quite a long time ago, in fact, pretty much after it joined the WTO and managed to persuade enough people that it should be allowed to join the WTO and benefit from the lower tariff regimes there. It basically stopped its reform process. It's dragged its feet over foreign ownership limits on vast numbers of economic sectors. Only now is it starting to talk about allowing car companies to wholly own their subsidiaries, for example, and investment banks to own 51% of their subsidiaries. And it's kept duties at high levels, 40% on car imports from America, for example. They have dragged their feet, and there's 100 reasons why I don't like Donald Trump, but I do think he's got a point on China having basically reneged on its commitments. And that's the issue. I don't think it's as much about geopolitical containment, about rising empires and so on, despite all the Belt and Road rhetoric. I think that's just a sort of hubris thing on China's part. It's the Belt and Road Initiative is more about trying to absorb excess capacity in their steel industry and construction sectors and so on by building things overseas and then saddling those countries with debt, which they will eventually default. Going back to property, you did ask some questions about things like rates. Rates are part of the overall tax collection system, and if they are levied fairly and evenly, that's fine. They are a stable form of collection in the sense that we know who occupies and owns each piece of property, and we can charge them or seize their property. So it's quite a collectible form of revenue. But if you have too much revenue coming in and you're running a structural surplus, which, by the way, is against the basic law, which requires the government to balance its budget, then the right thing to do is to cut the rates of taxes, profits tax, salaries tax, and rates, to balance that equation and make sure that you're also spending enough on targeted welfare, not unmeans-tested. But not to indulge in selective rebates and waivers, as they do all the time. They treat it as if it's a sort of unexpected surplus, and so we must give you a reduction.
Well, they're always going to be selective, aren't they? It's really hard to make them not make
them
selective.
Well, the easy thing is we'll reduce rates from 5% of rateable value to 4%. That's a 20% reduction in the amount everybody pays, rather than saying, oh, well, if you own one in your own name, you will get a reduction on that up to a limit, and then if you own any others, like your car park space is separately rated, you won't get a reduction on that one. And, of course, many properties are owned through single-purpose companies, and so they will each qualify for one reduction.
Yeah, well, the point is that with these multiple for multiple owners or developers who have a lot of flats, they seem to be getting an enormous benefit.
They're paying an enormous amount of rates to start with. that's not the case. But, you know, if you try to use it as a welfare scheme rather than a return of excessive taxation, then yes, that's what you'll be doing. You're just trying to limit the number of claims or the amount of claims, as they've already done. They've already capped the rates waiver. But the right thing to do is to be honest about it and say, look, the best thing we can do to stimulate the economy is that we can afford to cut salaries tax to 10%, flat rate, no gimmicks, profits tax to 10%, all right, and no half rates for SMEs and so on.
Okay, that's something else. All right, yeah. David Faulkner, what do you think about the rates proposal?
Yeah, well, my view is it's a classic case of trying to micromanage the market and really taking a sledgehammer to crack a nut here. These rates rebates are not a given. I remember when they came in for the first time, and it was a one-year proposal, and then they repeated it. They varied the rate. I think at the start it was 1,500, then it went to 2,500, then it was one quarter per year, then it was two. It's not a fixed rebate, and the government can review this at any time, so I'm not quite sure why we're making such a song and a dance about it. If we don't want to give rate rebates, that's fine. It's immensely complicated to start saying, we'll set up a database to see who owns more than one property and we're only going to give it for one property and not two. That's far too complicated. We don't need to do that. My view is you either get rid of the rate rebate, or if we don't want to charge rates, let's not charge rates. As David says, you can change the rates percentage every year. It's been 5% for the 34 years that I've been in Hong Kong. In the UK, it changes every year. And, of course, you can have different rates for different property types as well. You can have 1% for residential, 1% for commercial, if you want to. But let's not make it complicated and try and work out who's got multiple units.
I really can't understand why it is so complicated. Can't you just put it in a spreadsheet? All the owners, we've got records of all the owners. It's just a question of seeing if their names match and how many they've got.
Well, maybe they used a different passport to register their ownership, or a different ID card. You know, whether they use their wife's or their husband's or children's. You know, people start gaming the system if you're going to start fiddling around with selective rebates. I mean, they're already doing that with the stamp duty system. Since the government says you can own one property and only pay a maximum of 4.25% stamp, so then people say, okay, well, make sure that one property is in my name, one property in my wife's name, and each of my children can hold a flat, and you end up with down the road you're going to end up with disputes over real ownership when they start saying, actually, he was just my nominee. But why put people through all that difficulty and also freeze up the market so much? I mean, you should be able to move homes to be closer to a job or a school without having to pay about 2 years' rent to the government in the form of stamp duty, which is what 4.25%
right.
is.
Xu Wing-Ching, what do you think about the suggestion on rates, the rates concession?
It depends on the purpose of the rate relief. If it is because the government have overcharged the taxes, it should return to the people who have paid more, so every property shall enjoy the rate relief. But if it is for the purpose of helping those less privileged, then you shall have rent relief, not just rate relief. So I don't think this is a clever move. It will only invite a lot of other criticism.
Yeah, if you want to help the poor, you've got to identify them and give them the support that they need. You know, and in the housing system, for example, the government doesn't need to own millions of apartments in public rental housing. It simply needs to provide rent support in the form of a public rental voucher to anyone up to a means-tested limit who qualifies. And based on the size of their families, so that when the kids leave home, they don't sit in a half-empty public rental unit. They actually get half the voucher they would have done, and they go to a smaller unit in the market. So if you make the whole system more flexible, give people a voucher they can spend anywhere in the market, then you actually
it just looks
reduce
bad.
The problem.
It just looks bad, doesn't it?
What?
It looks like you're giving a special tax break for very rich people.
You're giving
an extra advantage to people...
No, I'm talking about public rental housing.
No, you're not giving it to very rich people. You've got to remember a lot of people that own private rental housing are elderly people, and it's their pension, basically. They might have one extra unit or two, and that is what they live off. So it's not just sort of large landlords with dozens of units that are benefiting. Mr. and Mrs. Average is impacted as well.
Actually, if we have more supply, I think most of the people in Hong Kong can afford to pay their rent because our development in economy, our GDP per capita is higher than most of the country in the world. So they can easily afford to pay the rent if the price is only reflecting the development cost and the reasonable profit for the developer.
Xu Wing-Ching, while you're there, I know you're only staying till 9 o'clock, just got a few minutes left. Do you think that a downturn, if it was, say, 15%, would that... must sort of impact on debate about development and land supply, medium and long-term land supply. Do you think that that's going to change attitudes? Do you think people are going to say it's not so desperate?
No, I don't think so. The price change cannot change the situation that we have not enough supply in Hong Kong. Even if the price drops, if you have no supply, people can find no place to live, and the price won't drop too much.
But people do find a place to live. Really, it's the price, isn't it, which is causing the pain in Hong Kong?
Of course, the price is high, but we are all living in very small flats. Even if the price drop, if no supply, we will be still living in very small flats.
You say very small flats. I've always wondered about this. If you think of London, the average one-bedroom flat is 400, 450 square feet. The flats here aren't that tiny, really, compared to other big cities, are they?
It's only in the central part of London. If in the outskirts, you can live close to 100 square meters, more than 1,000 square feet.
But talking about perception, Xu Wing-Ching, you don't think that people will see the issue of land supply, the urgency will dwindle, even if, as you say, the reality
is
the same? Do you think people will see it differently?
You can see in the newspaper less voice about the property market, but if you want to improve the living environment in Hong Kong, you still need to increase the land supply.
Mm. Well, you only have to go back to 2003 to remember when the government, under pressure, suspended the home ownership scheme and left thousands of apartments empty
at the Hung Hong Peninsula. That is not a correct move.
There was a public perception then that their prices were falling too rapidly and there was too much supply and so on. So you're right, Hugh, that the effect of a consistent reduction in prices will be to take the pressure off that whole land supply debate. And people will say, well, if you're going to proceed with the East Lantau megalopolis, then you're going to end up with vast amounts of new supply hitting the market. And where's the population going to fill that?
Okay. Well, we've got a break for the news now at 9 and say goodbye for the moment too. Thank you very much indeed. Xi Wing Ching, founder of the Centreline Group. Drop us a line, backchat@rthk.hk, with your thoughts on the property market and that issue of the rates concession. And also your ideas for Backchat Person of the Year, an interesting pair which has just been sent by Gloria. Thank you very much indeed. I'll get to those after the news. Before it, the weather, mainly cloudy, rather cool this morning, dry with bright periods, 14 degrees at the moment, relative humidity is at 72%. Welcome back. Back chat on a Thursday morning with Anna Fenton and me, Hugh Chiverton. We're talking about the local property market. Later, we're going to be talking about Meng-Wan Zhou being granted bail and Donald Trump's statements on that case. If you've got any thoughts on any of these issues, drop us a line. Backchat@rthk.hk is the email address. Or you can go to our Facebook page as well. That's Backchat on RTHK Radio 3. I'll check that in a moment. We've got lots of emails, interesting emails. And now we're also looking, because we're coming to the end of 2018, for our Person of the Year. This week we're doing nominations, ideas that we can put on our list and vote on them over Christmas and the New Year. And we'll get to the result in our first programme of 2019. Drop us a line, backchat@rthk.hk, with your ideas. Anna, you were just saying we've got one?
Yes, Adam Roberts, the bomb disposal officer for the police, for his heroic work in defusing the recently discovered Second World War ordnance around town, especially in Wanchai.
Right, interesting nomination. Okay, and here's two more interesting nominations. It's from Gloria, who says she's got two. First of all, Patrick Ho. She gives a little bit of biography. Ho was arrested in New York in late 2017, convicted. If Ho is imprisoned, he's the second principal official after Raphael Hoy, who is put behind bars. Third, yeah, I was going to say, yeah, that should be third. Okay, Patrick Ho for Person of the Year. And also, says Gloria, Benny Tai. Benny Tai, a legal scholar and democracy activist. He's currently facing, of course, he's before the courts at the moment. So two interesting and contrasting kind of nominations there. Patrick Ho and Benny Tai. They have their own legal issues. All right. Thank you very much indeed for those suggestions. To today's topic, the property market, we're joined now by David Webb, who's a shareholder activist, founder of website.com. David Faulkner, Executive Director of Valuation and Advisory Services in Asia at Colliers International. And also now by Andy Kwan. Andy is Director at the ACE Centre for Business and Economic Research. Okay, some emails. This is Gloria again, who says, secondary school macroeconomics teaches us that a rise in interest rates will increase cost of borrowing, attract people to keep money in their bank savings, hence cool down the overheated economy. Nowadays, bank interest for savings is too low. Increase in interest rates will not be able to attract people to keep money in the bank. On the other hand, investors from mainland China will buy properties in Hong Kong no matter how high the interest rate is or whatever the stamp duty they have to pay. People from mainland not only buy properties in Hong Kong, they buy premises all over the world. Indeed, they buy all sorts of commodities from milk powder to luxurious products. The property market in Hong Kong, Canada, Australia, US, etc. will not be able to sustain without them. This is very true, with due respect. That comes from Gloria. And Joe Average says, go to Yuen Long. The property agents, the governments, and the banks are up to something. All the property shops do not have pictures in their windows now. They cover them up, and they're not interested to sell property. Why is this the only property they're interested to sell is very, very small studio flats that are at high prices but look cheaper than a regular flat. Why is it in the villages we still have empty flats for over 5 years, but these have been sold to Chinese contractors who are selling to China so the Hong Kong property companies won't sell to you? Then we have cheaper properties in the property shop windows, but these are all government schemes, and of course we don't qualify. The government is heavily involved in the property market because they make money out of it, and many of them have two or three properties. The renovation market has also been killed off because construction companies are paying higher salaries, so there are not enough contractors to do renovations and repairs, and consultants are becoming too expensive. What the hell is going on? Asks Joe Average. Andy Kwan, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Okay, what is going on? How do you read the market? How do you think it's going to move in 2019?
I think the market is doing correction, and we've been waiting for such a correction. Although the so far the decrease in the secondary hand housing market in terms of the price is only about 5 to 6%, but I think it's going to come down more the price, and as a result, I think the potential buyers will wait for the decline and for the decline in the price, and then I think the whole thing is the whole correction may be about 10% decline in the property price.
10, you say? 10%.
At 20%.
20%.
20% or more.
Okay. But you think it's just kind of the market normal operations? I mean, it's gone up a lot, so it's going to come down a bit kind of thing?
Do you think
there's any? I mean, what's behind this? Why now?
Why now? Because it's the market. When it comes to like the price, the price level is it's very very high. It's not affordable, first of all. But the word affordable has been we have said that for a long time. Mm. But when I think it's the external factors. People don't have enough confidence to buy because you look at the trade war between the States and China. You look at the U.S. economy. Now the Fed has raised interest rate to the point where it's very close to the neutral level, which is about 2.25 or right now it's at 2.225. I think the next rate, wage increase will be up to 2.5. So in that respect, people look at the global aspect. There are so many uncertainties that would eventually hurt the sentiment there. I think the whole thing is driven by sentiment, and people come to realize that the price is really, really ridiculously high. So you can see the transactions too, and the number of transactions has come down quite a bit. It shows the confidence has been declining. So you combine the external factors plus the decline in confidence. So I think the whole thing triggered the decline there. When you have a decline, people expect more decrease there. So you wait and until the thing is quite reasonable to come in. But the sad part is when you have a decline, people just wait, and they will just wait until they see some bottoming. But the thing is really, really funny because for the past 9 years, we have some kind of a very low interest rate, super low interest rate, plus the wrong policies carried out by the government to control the market. And also HAMA also is responsible for tightening the mortgage too much. So we create a monster in the market like this. But eventually, when you have such a gigantic bubble, it's going to pop. Whether it's going to be very painful, I don't know. Because if you look at the owners, okay, the landlords, they're about 66 or 67% of the landlords have already finished mortgage. So when we talk about decline in that respect, so we have to look at how many people have paid off their mortgage, and only like the one third of the house owners, they still pay a mortgage. But because they have to, for the people who bought flats for the past few years, they pay very high down payment. So in that respect, that's why I believe when we talk about the decline in the property price, it's not going to be like 40%, 50%. So I was fine with 20%.
But isn't that a case of thank goodness for prudence and that we won't have a negative equity situation? Wasn't this all set up?
Sorry, my reception is very bad. I'm using a mobile phone. Could you repeat the question?
Isn't this a good thing that we're not going to have a bubble, really, because we're not going to have a huge negative equity situation? Isn't that what was designed to happen?
Yes. But somehow when we talk bubble, like usually it's sentiment-driven. We're talking about irrational exuberance. Somehow, like when the government imposes certain like control policies, try to control the price, usually when you look at the policies right now carried by the government, those policies make things worse. Because somehow the policies really impede the supply of housing, okay, the houses in the market. Also, when you look at the Hong Kong MA, the Hong Kong Monetary Authority, when HKMA tightens the mortgage rate so much, that creates a monster here, because only people with a lot of money can afford to buy, but it tells you, like, when only people with a lot of money who can buy flat, but somehow you basically lower the transactions in the market, especially when you look at the secondary market. And the number of transactions per year, basically is half of the normal level. When you combine...
Yeah, I think that has more to do with the... very high levels of stamp duty that have frozen up the market. Once you buy an apartment, for example, you can't sell it for 3 years without paying extra stamp duty.
That's true, David. But the problem is, like, when you look at the LTV ratio right now, it's 44%. But it means for a buyer, they have to pay 56% in terms of bank payment. That is quite high.
It depends on the value of the property. The HKMA has different thresholds for different
sizes. I'm talking about average, but it's quite high.
It's 70% for the smallest ones. It rises to 50% for the largest ones. The point is that the government does have a through the Monetary Authority a role to play in protecting the banking system, which otherwise the government and through them the taxpayers would have to bail out, and we don't want to have bailouts. We didn't have any bailouts in the global financial crisis. We've avoided that problem for a long time, and since the 1960s.
That's debatable. You know why?
Now you can debate whether the thresholds were too strict.
When you keep such a really tighten the so called the mortgage, okay. But what will happen is, like, when you look at the nano flat is some kind of like a side effect of the whole of the bubble. So when you have a nano flat here, what it means is, like, you distort the market so much because of the mortgage requirements. So in this case, like, the developers basically take opportunity to create nano flats. But when the market is in a bubble, people don't think properly. They come in and buy. Now you get stuck with nano flats in the market. So in this case, it's some kind of, they're doing two things.
One is fulfilling market demand for small enough flats to afford at very high prices. And because the Monetary Authority says you have to put down 30%, people are at least on notice, even if they borrow that 30% from someone else.
But secondly,
the government itself was a conspirator in producing nano flats, because they decreed in various auctions or land sales that the developer must produce a minimum number of flats, and when you do the maths, that forced them to produce small units.
It's a combination of factors. Because of, you know, when you try to get qualified for the 30% for the 7% mortgage, so the price must be less than four mil, right? But in this case, the developers would take the opportunity try to satisfy the market. But at that time, the market is in very abnormal situation, because like the people don't think properly. They just get into some crazy idea the market price will go up forever. But now they have to taste their own medicine.
They only have to ask their parents what the market did before.
If they don't remember themselves. You're talking about daddy effect, okay? That's fine. But the problem is...
I'm saying asking the parents about do prices always go up, daddy or mummy, because they will tell you, no.
I can remember
when they crashed in 1998.
Andy Kwan, do you think things are going to be different this time? Do you think that Carrie Lam saying, you know, we're not going to step in the market by making this announcement on rates rates, concessions, and so on. They say we're going to have a different attitude this time. We're not going to
slave the owners. Now, I think the whole situation would be quite different. Now, when it comes to the race rebate, okay, I think actually I don't really support that kind of race rebate, because like we are talking about people who own assets, okay. Of course, some assets are old, like old houses, okay. But you have to look at in terms of the increase in value. Okay, for the past 6-7 years, okay, the increase is tremendous in terms of prices. So in this case, those people enjoy the capital gain there. But when it comes to this time right now, because of the house owners, many house owners pay off the mortgage. So in terms of correction, I don't think it's going
The valuations have tripled since about 2008. Yeah. And so if we drop 33%, they will still have doubled since 2008, and that's probably around where we'll end up, in my guess. If I have to guess on this, I'll say about 30% drop from the high point. We're already down just 3-4%, but another
26%. Yeah, but it takes a long time to reach about, like, I think the decline because would be slow in terms of time, but in terms of level, what you said...
It depends on two major things. One is interest rates, the other one is rents, and the ability of people to pay rents I don't think is going to accelerate very much. I don't think real incomes are going to increase very much. That means that given that yields are at record lows, valuations have to come down. And
David Faulkner?
That's true.
Well, I was going to say, just on the matter of rates, of course, if rents come down, so will rateable values and so will rates payable if we're still using 5%. So the market will actually correct the amount you have to pay in rates without the rebates. But I agree with what Dave is saying. It's basically capital values that are most exposed at the moment. Yields are at record lows. And we need those to come up. I don't see there being rental growth in this market, so I would expect capital values to come off.
Yeah, and I don't think that we're going to have a lot of negative equity, because even the last people in at the top of the bubble putting down 30%, yes, they're likely to have a technical negative equity, but they probably still have their jobs and they're probably still paying their mortgage. And the last time we went through that massive correction in 1998, the default rate on mortgages never rose very high. The banks were perfectly able to absorb it, and we moved on. And so I don't think we're going to have any major problems with that. But of course, the last people in will be feeling that they've just lost their entire life savings through the deposit that they've paid. Hopefully, they're young enough to rebuild that as their incomes improve over their careers.
Okay, just let me add one point here. Because the interest rate is not going to rise, I'm talking about the U.S. interest rate, it's going to rise to be very 3% or 4% when you look at the 10-year bond yield there. So if it keeps at 2.5%, so the interest rate cycle basically is finished. Okay, will be finished soon. So in this case, the yield doesn't have to go up that much in order to, say, reach back at normal level, 4%, 5%. But I still believe there's a correction, meaningful correction coming. And right now, it's only 5%. It's not enough. And I believe the decline in terms of the power price will be 20% or above. But it's not going to be like a collapse in the market.
David Faulkner, for years we've been hearing that, you know, property prices in Hong Kong are too high, this knocks on to the cost of living and everything else. Shouldn't we be welcoming this? Isn't this just a necessary reality check?
Well, we've had high property prices in Hong Kong ever since I've been here, and I think back before then.
Yeah, I mean, you and I have been talking about this for years. Do you remember when there used to be a 7-year cycle in all of this? I mean, what's happened to cycles?
Oh, well, I think what's happened to cycles basically is that we've had a couple of distortions in the market. Number one is we've had the growth of China, which had a major impact, or has had a major, it's still having a major impact on Hong Kong. And I think the other thing is that we have a lot more government tinkering with policy now than we used to have in the old days. I'm really worried to hear you say that there's going to be less pressure for us to bring on land supply because prices are falling, because that is exactly how we got to where we are today. We need a constant supply of property coming on, and then we have a normal property cycle. You're absolutely right. As prices go up, developers build more, and when prices come off, they build less. we haven't been working like that because we've had too much tinkering with policy. So I would like to see the government just stepping back a little bit, keeping the supply of land coming on, removing all these taxes and let the market find its own level, and then we will get back to normality.
Right. And one aspect of it we haven't discussed is they shouldn't keep trying to invent new schemes, starter homes and halfway, you know, home ownership schemes and sandwich schemes. You know, the government's job is to make sure that people have adequate housing, not that they own a home. Some people will never own a home, and that's totally okay, as long as they are adequately housed.
Right.
And that's what they need to focus on, not home ownership schemes.
Okay, that brings us finally to a comment from Luis in an email. Thank you very much indeed. He says, I'm constantly shocked at the comments of David Webb. He's clearly wealthy. The lack of compassion he shows for the less well-off is truly awful. Getting rid of public housing, what planet does he come from? Planet mean and greedy. No wonder there's a huge disparity in wealth when people like him influence markets.
Well, if you're going to engage an ad hominem and a tax reader, I think you should listen carefully to what I say, which is that I've advocated giving everybody who qualifies public rental vouchers, means tested, to the same value of the subsidy they're receiving now by paying discounted rent. So nobody would be worse off. In fact, they would be better off because they would have the choice of where to spend that voucher. We wouldn't force all the poor people in Hong Kong to live in public housing ghettos in remote places. We'd actually give them more flexibility in their lives. Thank you.
All right. And a contrasting comment from Joe Average, who says, Man of the Year, I would like to nominate David Webb for Man of the Year. Reason, he's a logical, realistic person who can explain well and understand both sides of the situation. In fact, I think he should work for Carrie Lam and enlighten her on what's going on in the Hong Kong real world. Okay, there we go. Contrasting views. Joe Average, thank you very much indeed for that. Thank you, David Webb, for joining
us
once again. We'll put your name in for Person of the Year. David Faulkner, many thanks to you, Executive Director at Colliers International, and Andy Kwan, Director of the ACE Centre for Business and Economic Research. While we're on the subject of the Person of the Year, here's another one, interesting one. This is from Vic, who says, Hi, Backchat team. I would like to nominate Frederick Fung Ging-Ge, for being one of the last remaining principled politicians in Hong Kong. The Democratic camp need more people like him, rather than sidelining a leader like him whose core values do not change with time. The camp has to learn from him. He has also pursued grassroots issues besides the one-point program of universal suffrage, which is important, but not the only pressing issue which the Hong Kong society is facing. The decay of the Democratic camp, especially the Democratic Party, is evident by yesterday's news of several members abandoning the sinking ship. That reading from Vic. Thank you very much indeed for that. Some interesting suggestions coming up there for our Backchat Person of the Year.